Get energized and excited to tell the world, hey, you can call me Catholic. Live from the Christ Cathedral Campus in Garden Grove, California, EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Orange County Catholic Radio present Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normanton.
Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, if there is any excellence and if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. These are the words of St. Paul. Those are also the words that we use to open our show every week because it's good advice, words to remind us that what we see in the world around us depends a lot on what we look for. And here on Call Me Catholic, we look for good things to talk about, and talk about them we do every week. I am Peggy Normanton, and you have arrived at Call Me Catholic, a light and lively hour of conversation intended to affirm, explore, and, well, celebrate our Catholic identity in these modern times. So we can wake up and say to the world each and every day, oh yeah, you can call me Catholic. I am looking across the desk at Jimmy G right now. He's my chief engineer and chief fact checker. Happy New Year, Jimmy G, and happy anniversary. We've been on the air 2 years with EWTN.
Well, happy New Year to you, happy anniversary, and happy birthday.
I thought that was coming.
You weren't going to escape that one.
You can run, but you can't hide. Yeah, thank you very much. It is my birthday today.
Yes.
I always am a little tired on my birthday because it comes after a very busy holiday season.
Right.
But I embrace the year ahead nonetheless, and I thank you for your good wishes. Jimmy G and I are coming to you from high atop the Tower of Hope on the beautiful Christ Cathedral campus in Orange County, California. We are the great and growing Diocese of Orange, one of the very fastest growing dioceses in the country right now. We ordained two auxiliary bishops last year in 2017. That's pretty stunning. Bishop Timothy Fryer, he was ordained in January. And then in the end of the year, in December, Bishop Tan Nguyen was ordained to serve our Vietnamese community here in the Diocese of Orange. We have here in this county the largest Catholic Vietnamese community in the country. So what a gift we received in 2017 with our two new auxiliary bishops put in place to assist and support our primary shepherd, Bishop Kevin Vann. Now, speaking of gifts, tomorrow we celebrate the Feast of the Epiphany. This feast commemorates the visit of the Magi to the baby Jesus and their presentation of somewhat mysterious gifts to the divine baby in the manger.
Right.
I'm always aware of the fact that January 6th, my birthday, is the actual official Feast of the Epiphany. So that's why people, I think, are generous in remembering it because it's actually another feast day. But I'll accept all the good wishes and I like to be affiliated with that holiday. So today, this first show of 2018, I want to talk about gifts. Just right now, we are just cleaning up the trappings and the wrappings from the gift exchanges of the Christmas season this last year, right? And maybe you received some fabulous presents from Santa or from friends and family. I mean, I love presents. My eye is the first one to spot a wrapped gift sitting on a counter under a tree, in the table, whatever. And it's always fun to receive that one thing you've wanted all the days of your life.
To me, it's kind of a bummer to be driving around and seeing the trees out on the curbs.
Oh, I know.
Out in the gutters.
Chopped up.
People taking their trees out. Well, I guess it's okay now, but, you know, the day after Christmas, really?
Well, you know what? I know. People talk about that, but sometimes people leave on vacation the day after Christmas, so
yeah,
they want to get that.
That's true.
And sometimes if you get it early in December, it dries out if you've got a real tree. I mean, I'm defending this curbside tree thing, but, you know, eventually you do have to say goodbye if you have a live tree. Bye-bye.
You've made me think about
going
that.
Into the recycle bin, okay. But thank you for bringing so much joy and beauty into our home during the Christmas season. So there was a lot of gift exchanges going on, and that's always fun. It's always fun to go out and find something really special for somebody. But in the end, things are going to be replaced. They're going to break down. Mm-hmm. They're going to become outdated. The truest, most enduring gift that we can receive or give anyone is the gift of self. Does that sound like a cliche?
The gift, it sounds so Hallmark.
It does sound. Yeah. The gift of self. But it's the people that surround us that enrich and nourish our lives in a way that things can never do. When you look back over your lifetime, things don't make memories. People do, because God dwells in people.
Amen.
He doesn't dwell in the iPhone X.
Right, exactly.
Okay, as far as I know. And this show Call Me Catholic has gifted me with the extraordinary opportunity each week to meet and chat with people I might not have otherwise had a reason to know. So today we're going to look back on the year 2017 and review some of my favorite interviews with favorite people. Of course, I've never had a bad guest, never. Never a guest I regretted, loved every person that sat in this chair next to me or engaged with me over the phone. But some conversations stand out for one reason or another more than others. And I thought it would be kind of a kick to revisit those encounters and tell you why they made an impression on me. But there's another component to this show theme. I consider my listeners great gifts as well. We may never have met, but I know you're out there and I appreciate you very much and I appreciate your input. So I'm inviting you guys to call me during the show and share with me some ideas you might have for guests that you'd like to see me interview in 2018.
There would not be a show without our wonderful listeners.
Well, we could play radio here.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But we know you're out there and we want to keep you happy and we want to keep you engaged. So give us a call if you have some ideas for guests that you'd like to see in 2018. The number is 714-282-6034. Matt will cue you up and we'll have that quick exchange on the air. But first up, it's the Call Me Catholic Countdown of the Week, which I'm going to switch up today. Now, the Call Me Catholic Countdown always lists my top five of some topic, my top five favorite of this or that. Well, today I'm only going to talk about a number one favorite thing. I'm going right to the top. So our show today, our overall show theme is about God's gift of people in our lives. And on New Year's Day, I lost my Uncle Jimmy, my mom's younger brother, who was one of the most memorable, adorable, inspiring gifts in my life. Definitely my number one favorite uncle. My only uncle, but my favorite uncle. And I want to talk to you about him because I feel this is part of my grieving process. And he was so wonderful that maybe some of you listeners actually have met him in your life. His name was James William Anderson. He was my mom's younger brother. He grew up in Santa Monica, California, as did my mom and his other older sister. He was born in 1926, so he lived through the Depression. And when he was they really struggled as a little household growing up. They had lots and lots of cousins and they all surrounded and supported each other. But, this particular family, my mom and her sister and brother and her mom and dad they had a hard time getting along financially. And, you know, it was tough times. And so when Jimmy, my uncle, was a little boy, he was outside playing and my mom recalls this harrowing story often. He got shot by a BB gun in his eye.
Wow.
And, you know, just like the Christmas story, only it really happened. And, my mom witnessed it. It was quite terrible. And so he lost an eye at a young age. He had an artificial eye for the rest of his life. But he was also very, very athletic and very, very active kid. So that never squelched his spirit. It almost just re-engaged him with life. And he went on to UC Davis. And where he was a great, great athlete. In fact, he lettered in varsity in two sports. He became eventually a UC Davis Hall of Famer for his athletic contributions. And during his time in college, he'd often tell the story of how he lived in the stable. And this is during, you know, the war times, where they had the agricultural department at UC Davis because he could work there and earn some living accommodation, living expenses. And he also went to school and he was also in sports. So but in the end, Jimmy graduated from there. He went on to work in sales. He had the most magnetic, loving, passionate personality you could ever meet. You never met this guy that you didn't feel loved and interesting in his presence. He was a great Catholic. He was a great patriot. He raised his family very close to where we grew up in Los Angeles. So our families were very close. He had five kids, four daughters and a son. And he just lit up a room and we all adored him. And he died on January 1st this year. And it is such a great loss. His sons-in-law all gave wonderful little eulogies and toasts in his honor. And I want to just share this one that my cousin Daryl gave. He said that he went on to talk about how beloved this guy was, Uncle Jimmy, and my Uncle Jimmy, his father-in-law Jimmy. And he said, in his family, that they have a beautiful scripture passage that they always use that comes from Romans about how in God's way, all things come together for his good if you work with God. Mm-hmm. And he talked about how that was my Uncle Jimmy, his father-in-law Jimmy, and how Jimmy once talked about the saddest day in his life was when he was a senior in high school, and he went with a cadre of friends to go enlist for the Army because the war had broken out. He was a great patriot. Even as a young boy, he wanted to enlist. And he was a superstar in his high school. Well, when they all returned back from this process, Jimmy was the only one that had been rejected from the enlistment process because of his artificial eye. And it was it was tragic for him.
Wow.
It was embarrassing. It was humiliating. It was disappointing. It was awful for him that moment. But my cousin Daryl went on to say that wasn't that a beautiful thing that God saved him from the ravages of war because he kept this pure and joyful heart all his life.
Mm.
It wasn't tarnished by having had the experience of the violence of the front lines, the tragic loss and gruesome evidence of war that you do see when you're fighting the war. And so I just thought that was so beautiful, and I was so grateful for that toast because it really put things all in perspective. And thank you for letting me share about my Uncle Jimmy. I loved him so much. And Jimmy, may the choirs of angels come to greet you. Godspeed you to paradise. We love you so much. You're my number one uncle. And we thank you for the joy that you brought into all of our lives and the inspiration too. Okay. Now back to business. Did you know that Call Me Catholic is on Facebook? You bet. We'd like you to join
really?
Our family too. Yeah. Didn't you know that, Jimmy G? Get on there and like us, Jimmy G.
That's right. We've got like 1,800 friends.
Yeah, and growing. We have pictures and links and comments. So get on board and join our Facebook train, facebook.com/callmecatholic. Coming up, we are doing a retrospective on our favorite interviews from 2017, and we are inviting you to call in with suggestions for who you'd like to see me interview in 2018. I would love to hear your ideas. 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. Marvelous Matt will put you through. So stick around for our Best of 2017 show. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Exploring the perils and blessings of embracing a Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Hello, friends and listeners. Well, that's kind of one and the same, actually. If you're a listener, then you're a friend. Welcome to Call Me Catholic's Look Back at 2017. I am your host, Peggy Normandin, and today we're sharing some of our favorite Call Me Catholic conversations from 2017, and you can call in with your suggestions for people you'd like to see interviewed in 2018. Maybe there's a subject you'd like to see covered or a Catholic personality you'd like to meet. And right off the bat, we have some suggestions. We have Nick from Santa Cruz on the line, and he's going to make a comment. Hello, Nick. Welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Hello. Surprise, Mom. Your son, Nick.
This is my son.
I want to call and wish you a happy birthday.
Oh, Nick, darling. Thank you so much. Happy birthday to you, too, because if I wasn't born, you wouldn't be born.
This is true. I celebrate year-round.
Oh, thank you.
So I want to wish you a happy birthday. I love the tribute to Uncle Jimmy, and I do have a request for 2018.
Okay. Go ahead.
It's a repeat interview request, and probably my favorite interview of 2017 was with Father Greg Boyle, and he's got a new book out, and I'd love to hear from him again on the show.
Yeah, his new book is called Barking to the Choir.
This is true.
This is true.
St. Nick happened to deliver it in my Christmas presents this year.
That's right.
It's on the reading list.
And you're going to hopefully get it autographed by Father Boyle, right?
Hopefully soon. Yeah.
Great. Well, that's an excellent suggestion. In fact, we saw Father Boyle or Father Greg over the summer, and he said, I'd love to come back on and talk about my new book. So great suggestion, and we will put that into place immediately. You read Tattoos on the Heart. That was his first book.
I did. I loved it.
Yeah. That was great. And, you know, we have the great fortune of knowing him personally as a family friend. So, we are blessed by that, and we all support his book, Barking to the Choir, by Father Greg Boyle. Well, do you have any New Year's resolutions, Nick?
Actually, it's to read more books, so that's a good start to the list. That's second on the list. I'm finishing a book right now.
Well, I think first on the list is to get thyself married properly, right? I mean, you're engaged, and you're getting married in July. We have a very exciting family year ahead of us.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at that more as a commitment than a resolution, because I don't always stand my resolution. So I don't want to put it in that category.
Yeah, well, we are so excited to have Natalie in. She's the best thing that happened to us in 2017, for sure. Your engagement to Natalie, we're so excited and thrilled to have her join our family. So thank you for calling in, love.
And with that, we are on the same page. That was the highlight of my 2017 as well. Yeah. I love you, Mom. Happy birthday.
Okay. Thank you, darling. Thank you so much for calling in. What a fun surprise. Who knew that Nick from Santa Cruz was my Nick from Santa Cruz? Okay, thanks, Nick. That was a really sweet contribution. So, hey, if you recall, this time last year, we were getting ready for the inauguration of President Donald Trump, and there was much anticipation about what his inaugural address would be in content and in style. So, last January, I invited Dr. Craig Smith, himself a former presidential speechwriter, onto the show to talk about memorable moments from past inaugural addresses and his thoughts on what kind of a statement President Trump would likely make in his first address to the nation. And here's a little excerpt from that conversation. Today we are discussing the art of the inaugural address in honor of the upcoming inauguration of our 45th President of the United States on Friday. And it's my great pleasure to welcome back to our program Dr. Craig Smith to lead us in that discussion. Dr. Craig Smith has had a front row seat at some of the most important political events of the 20th century. He was a speechwriter for President Gerald Ford, political campaign manager for a U.S. Senator, consultant to Chrysler CEO Lee Iacocca, leading advocate for First Amendment issues in academia and in the nation's capital. And as a CBS News staffer, he covered political conventions and addressed the directive, Walter Cronkite wants this question answered now, Craig. That's just a few highlights from his dossier. Welcome back to Call Me Catholic, Craig.
It's good to be back, Peggy.
What do you do when you get a directive like that from Walter Cronkite, God rest his soul, and you don't have Wikipedia, laptop, phone, anything like that?
It's tough. You hope you have it in your head. If you don't have it in your head, you have the right to call anyone you want. When Pat Nixon came forward to address the Republican convention in 1972, Walter turned to me and said, "What was the last time a first lady addressed the convention?" Well, I didn't know the answer to that, and I began calling around, and I finally got a hold of Liz Carpenter, who worked for LBJ, and she said it was Eleanor Roosevelt in 1940 who came to the convention to defend her husband's third term.
Wow, and you can access that information pretty quickly. That was a while ago, Craig.
Yes, yeah, well, we got the scoop, and it made Walter Cronkite very happy.
Well, and I'm sure you tapped into your altar server training of, you know, cool, staying cool under pressure, you know, untangling the incensor chain as it's smoking in your eyes.
Well, the priest that trained me to be an altar boy always said, if you make a mistake, do it three times, and they'll think it's part of the Mass.
It's a Holy Trinity thing.
There you go.
Hey, so Craig, you have developed this niche knowledge of inaugural addresses. I know you've spoken around the world about that. Was there always a history of inaugural addresses since the beginning of our presidencies?
Yeah, when George Washington became president, he decided it would be appropriate, although it's not mandated in the Constitution, as is the State of the Union address, to address the Congress and invited people. And so he had his letter secretary draft remarks. And he looked at them, and he didn't think they were quite right, and he sent them over to James Madison, who lived down the road, and had James Madison look over the remarks, and Madison thought they were awful and threw them in a trash can and drafted a whole new inaugural address. And then they went to New York. As you said, it was supposed to be March 4th, but the weather was terrible, and they couldn't pull the inaugural off in New York until April. And so then it was invited guests only. It wasn't open to the public. It was members of Congress, the cabinet, and so on and so forth. And Washington delivered, after taking the oath of office, putting his hand on a Bible, establishing that principle, he then gave the first inaugural address, and we've had them ever since.
So were they important at the beginning?
Yes.
Did people read them?
Yes. They set the tone for the administration. Washington's second inaugural address was only two paragraphs. It's the shortest ever because he thought that he had already established where the administration was going. And one would hope that subsequent presidents would have had nice short inaugurals also.
We've lost the art of brevity in modern politics. So what, in your mind, would be one of the most memorable inaugural addresses in our history?
Well, there's the killer inaugural address, which is one of my favorite stories. And this is what happens when you don't listen to your speechwriter. William Henry Harrison won the election of 1840. The campaign slogan was Tippecanoe and Tyler too. And William Henry Harrison then wrote a very long inaugural address. And he showed it to Secretary of State Webster, and Webster said, that's not an inaugural address, that's a State of the Union. Don't deliver that. Mm. And Harrison ignored him and went out on March 4th, 1841, in an off-and-on rain on a cold Washington day and delivered a speech that was 1 hour and 45 minutes long. He caught a cold, it turned into pneumonia, and killed him.
That's a tough speech.
The longest inaugural and the shortest presidency.
So that certainly wasn't your favorite address then.
No. My favorite address was Lincoln's first inaugural, because by the time he got up on March 4th, 1861, to deliver that address, seven states had seceded from the Union. And so he faced the daunting task of trying to hold the rest of the states in the Union while also inspiring the North for the war that was coming. And so it was a very difficult speech. And the line I remember from it, there are two lines from it. He calls the country to its mystic cords of memory to try and unite the country. He talks about how Southerners and Northerners fought together in the Revolution. And then he asks the country as a whole to listen to the, quote, better angels of their nature.
Oh, how beautiful.
Which is a beautiful moment. And he succeeded in holding the border states in the Union, Maryland and Kentucky and Missouri. And, of course, then the rest is history.
Hmm. We're talking with Dr. Craig Smith today. A great pleasure, because he is not only a former presidential speechwriter himself, but he is an expert. He's a scholar on inaugural addresses in the history of our country. Speaking of Lincoln, did he write his own addresses, Craig?
For the most part, he did. He'd been steeped in Shakespeare, and he'd been steeped in the Bible, which he said were his inspirations. But at times, he did have help. He made Governor Seward of New York his Secretary of State, who'd been a rival for the nomination, and Seward sometimes helped him with the speeches. Some other people would contribute. His secretary, John Hay, would contribute.
Well, but I have an image of him sitting there penning the Gettysburg Address with his own pencil.
He liked to write his own And, of course, longhand at the time, which gave him a feeling for the speech.
Was he a good orator as well?
He had a rather high voice. He had a tenor voice, and he had a Midwestern twang.
Oh.
I don't think we'd find it all that pleasant. It reads better than it would have sounded.
Well, how important is the delivery? First of all, let me ask you this. What are the key components of an inaugural speech? Now, you mentioned the fact that it is not a State of the Union.
Right.
It's not a campaign speech. What characteristics does an inaugural
have? Well, as a genre, I think it sets the tone for the administration philosophically, ideologically. That's number one. Number two, it's trying to unite the country behind a new president, and I think that's important.
Mm-hmm.
As long as those things are done, I think the inaugural then needs to be very high-minded and done in the high style.
And how important is delivery? You know, interestingly, as Catholics, we are different from other religions in that even if the homily is bad, we realize that the priest has a very important role in what's going on, so we can see beyond a poor homily or poor delivery. How important is the delivery of the speech?
It's the sine qua non. You can have the best speech in the world, and if somebody stumbles through it, it ruins the speech. And you can have a bad speech, but if it's delivered well, a lot of times that will sell the speech.
So that's an excerpt from our conversation with Dr. Craig Smith. So knowledgeable. He speaks without notes. He has access to so much interesting information, and he's full of stories, and we love stories on our show. Now, another great storyteller that we had on the show last year was the actress Jennifer Namo Morales. She played the role of Frankie Valli's wife in the original Broadway production of Jersey Boys, and she talked about being a Catholic in the entertainment industry. Here's a little excerpt of that. Did your mom have any parting words for you as you left for the big city?
Yes. That morning when I was about to leave, my mom, she's very creative. She's an artist. And she had a spool of gold thread. And she said, okay, take this spool and I want you to unwind it. Well, she stayed there with one end. And I went practically all the way down the street. I said, okay. She said, okay, now wind it back. And I thought, what is my mom up to? So I wound it back. And she said, how old are you? And I said, 18. She took a little red marker and made a little tab. And what's the average lifespan? And back then, it was like 80. So she made another little tab. And she said, here's where you are right now, and here's the average lifespan. And all the rest, the gold thread, is eternity.
Oh.
So the choices you make now are going to affect where you spend eternity. So do not compromise.
What a beautiful metaphor.
Yes.
And a real visual reference point for the lesson there.
She's good with visual. She knows that I learn best with visual.
Yeah.
Because you can tell a kid everything, but I framed that. I brought that everywhere with me. My dorms, travels on the road, just to remember that and then choices that I had to make later on.
What were some of the tough choices you had to make?
Well, when I first went to NYU, it was 3 years. They were always cutting people, getting rid of them from, you know, if they weren't good enough. So I was always fearful of that.
Yeah.
But the minute that I got there, I just realized that it was the first time I was in the minority. I wasn't in a Catholic school where everyone believed the same way. I was in the minority, even in my little acting class, because, you know, there were people that had no faith, people that, you know, were Buddhists, maybe people with different ways of thinking, like a boy.
People whose mother didn't send them off with those beautiful words.
Exactly. And so I thought, whoa, I can either stay quiet or, you know, tell people how I feel. And there were a lot of professors and even some guys in the class that knew I was this innocent Michigander. And so they tried to sway me one way or another, but I would use scripture on them.
Really? Boy, Jennifer Namo Morales, full of excellent stories, beautiful metaphors. Boy, did we love her. And at the end of the show, she gave us a grousing rendition of How Great Thou Art. Okay, coming up in the next half of our show, more snippets from my favorite interviews in 2017 and your suggestions for who you'd like to see me interview and have a conversation with in 2018. Give us a call, 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to the best of Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Celebrating, exploring, and restoring our Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Hello and hi and happy new year, kids. Yep, this is our first show in 2018, and we're hoping you will be a part of it. Since we're celebrating the Feast of the Epiphany tomorrow, the gift of the Magi, we are exploring the gift of people. People are the stuff life is made of, not things. And in 2 years of producing Call Me Catholic, I've met some really cool and memorable people on this show. And we're taking a look at some of my favorite exchanges from 2017. But in the midst of that, we're also inviting you listeners to give us a call with your suggestions for guests you'd like to hear interviewed in 2018. We love your input, your ideas, and your show themes and topics. The number is 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. See if you can top my son's call. It's hard to top a son calling in. I mean, you know, but don't be afraid.
Well, I was going to say happy second anniversary of the show.
Yeah, that's right. So we're celebrating all kinds of things today. Now, on Call Me Catholic, we try to represent a gamut of subjects and personalities. And while we avoid politics and controversial subject matter, by and large, we have had occasion to interview people in the government and in the military. Last summer, I thoroughly enjoyed introducing our listeners to my friend, Katie McMaster, whose husband is General H.R. McMaster, the National Security Advisor to our president. And we had a fun conversation last summer. Here's a snippet from it. We're speaking today with Katie McMaster. She's the Associate Director for Christian Formation for the Diocese of Richmond, Virginia. She's also the wife of our National Security Advisor, the great General H.R. McMaster. So, Katie, recently you made the transition from, you know, one home to another to accommodate your husband's new position. Mm-hmm. And I want to share with our listeners, just to give you a little bit of the depth of Katie's spirituality. Katie and I know each other personally. We've been friends for a while. And when I heard that General H.R. McMaster had been called to Mar-a-Lago as a national security advisor candidate, along with Bolt and a few other people, I texted Katie right away and I said, wow, the general is being considered for this position. I said, how do you feel? And Katie's response, she texted it back and she said, I'm going on retreat this weekend and I want you to join me in praying for the right outcome.
Aww.
And that was very profound to me because I thought that was such a beautiful, obedient response. It wasn't like, yeah, that would be so cool. Or no, we don't want that to happen. It was a complete deference to Providence, mm-hmm. like what is
yeah,
right.
Yeah, isn't it amazing that happened to be my plan anyways, just because of my work. And it was a blessing to be there because it really was nerve wracking. And I'm very anxious about this, obviously.
Well, but this has been your life for the last 35
moving
years.
Moving.
And not only just moving, but deferring to the choices that are made for you.
Right. That's true.
And that's a beautiful model for, a public servant.
You know, and it's been amazing because I think early on I used to always fret and worry and HR was always so good. He always says, you know, what is meant to be will be. We've never not loved a place we've been. We've never not loved the people we've met. it's always been a very positive experience for us, always. And that's kind of what I tell young spouses. Like, you know, you're always worried about your next duty station. It's just like you're going to be where you need to be. And you may not think that's where you want to be, but someone else has a plan for you, and you just have to rely on that plan.
Well, it takes a certain amount of humility, but there's also a comfort in that. It's like, this decision wasn't mine. We're following mm-hmm. the orders of people that know what they're doing.
Right, right.
So, Katie, have you ever been really scared for you or your husband or your family?
Physically, I've not ever been scared of anything, but I think...
Well, you have a mean dog, Leo.
Oh, I do have a very mean. He's such a puppy. He's a bad dog is what he is. He's not a mean dog. He's a bad dog. I think I've always been afraid of anyone who would hurt my family with words mostly, or I've never been afraid when HR has been deployed. As many times as he's been deployed, I've never feared, because HR's never feared that. Mm-hmm. And I also, when I married HR, he wasn't going to stay in the Army. He did kind of trick me on that
Ooh.
Part. Yes. And he had hair too, Peggy.
Oh, yeah. So. I think he looks just fine right now. Okay, this is how we like our generals to look.
So when I married HR, we were getting out of the Army. So, you know, after 5 years, he had a commitment because he went to West Point. And then at the 5 year mark, he goes, you know, I really love this. I think I need to serve our country and stay in the military. And I thought, great, you know, I'm going to.
So you were good with that.
Yeah. And like my role, like I picked this life. I picked to marry someone in the military. My children didn't pick this life, and so it's been challenging for them, but they're more resilient because of it. But I've picked it, and HR and I have decided that this is what we're going to do. And, you know, I'm thrilled to support him and as he serves his country in his new, new job, too.
And let me say that you're serving our country, too, by supporting his career.
Right.
So that he can serve us. Mm-hmm. But you say your daughters didn't pick this career, but one of them just recently did.
She did.
Your middle daughter just got married.
She just married a lieutenant in the Ranger Regiment, Lee Robinson, my new son-in-law, wonderful, handsome man.
Hey, Lee and Colleen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got married in April.
Well, so when you watch them get married, as I do whenever I watch a young couple getting married on the altar, I think you don't have any idea how important the sacrament is.
Right.
And what your future holds. So mm-hmm. you've got to bring your love to the story, but that's about all you can do, your love and commitment.
Right.
So did you look at your daughter and think, I can't begin to tell you, but just trust?
Yes. Oh, yeah. It was a beautiful day. And I was telling you that the marriage sacrament was so special that, like, I kept saying to them, I said, you know, everyone worries so much about the reception and all this kind of stuff. I said, oh, no. The most important part of today is the celebration of your marriage.
Okay, and we're going to take that sound bite, and I'm going to keep it personally. I love what you just said. It's beautiful.
Yeah, and it really is. And we do get confused, and we do kind of put all the emphasis on the reception. Mm-hmm. And we also have to put the emphasis on the marriage, what happens after.
Yeah.
But it was beautiful. And we, you know.
Everything happens after.
Yeah, exactly. And you want to rely. And so I think that when you choose to get married in the Catholic Church as a sacrament, it does hold such an incredible bond where you're really saying, I will lay down my life for you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, Katie, I wanted to ask you, you educated, in addition to the great sacrifice you have made by your military service, you also educated your three daughters all the way from grammar school through university at Catholic schools.
At Catholic schools, yes.
And you worked for the Catholic Church, too. But I sort of wonder now, have they all graduated from college?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, that's many, many years of Catholic education, many universities and schools, and a big financial investment, sacrifice. We know that, too.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of a report card would you give the Catholic education system right now?
You know, I'd give them a very high grade. I love Catholic education. I'm a product of Catholic education. HR is a product of Catholic education. I think in the military, I can't imagine not doing that. But a great story. My dad said to me one time, I can remember when Catherine, my oldest, was we had moved to North Carolina and HR was going to graduate school. And there was a St. Thomas More. There was a small Catholic school that I wanted Catherine to go to kindergarten to. But there wasn't room. And I was devastated. I thought, oh, my heavens, what's going to happen if she doesn't go to Catholic school? And my dad said, Katie, then this is a man who put seven children through, you know, 12 years of Catholic education. And we all went to Catholic universities. And he said, what happens around your dinner table is more important than what happens in Catholic schools.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's true, too. But I do love our Catholic schools. And I, whenever we could, our children went to Catholic schools as we moved around in the military. And I think, again, why the Catholic Church was kind of our home. The Catholic school was a safe haven for my children.
Mm-hmm.
It was constant. They learned values. Important things go on in Catholic schools. I cannot even tell you the times that we've been to a public school or a Catholic school, the difference. There's just a warmth in a Catholic school.
Well, and I have visited a lot of grammar schools, too, in our Chatting with Catholic segments. And I love walking into the rooms that have the imagery and
yes.
knowing that whether these kids are aware of this or not, the devotions are all around them.
Absolutely.
And they're keeping them company.
Yes.
And they will console them as they get older,
yeah.
too, even if...
My sister's children go to Holy Family Cathedral School, and I went to a school mass there, and I was weeping because I thought, oh, this is so cute. I remember when I used to do that with my girls.
Yeah, yeah. So you were raised, as you mentioned, you were raised in a Catholic family, a large Catholic family. You're a cradle Catholic. Does your faith express itself differently than your mother's faith, and you have these three daughters? Do they identify with the faith in a different way?
Well, I think it's generationally. Mm-hmm. I do think that different generations have a different relationship with their faith. I think that my mom and dad are devout Catholics. I think my generation maybe internalized it more because after Vatican II, the understanding of you know why we do what we do was we understood why we do what we do. I see my children who still are practicing Catholics. It is more challenging for that generation because I think that because relativism has creeped into our society mm-hmm. and there's just so many things battling against being a holy person in our society that it's more challenging for our kids.
Mm-hmm. She's such a great person to talk to. That's just an excerpt, a quick excerpt from our conversation with Katie McMaster, wife of General H.R. McMaster. What a privilege. And I hope that we can get her back in the studio next time her tour of duty brings her out to Orange County. Now, you know, when you know somebody personally and you like them personally, it's really hard. It's kind of, you get nervous watching them projected in the news. Mm. You know, you don't like to see them unfairly or harshly treated. And I know Katie McMaster is very protective of her husband's image. She knows what a good man he is. And obviously, she hates to see him occasionally, or she scours the news to see if he's ever misrepresented. And so how and where we get our news is an important aspect of how credible that news is. And as Catholics, we like to have some trusted sources for giving us current events information from a distinctly Catholic perspective. And the preeminent news source for that is the National Catholic Register. It provides news on the latest issues, people, and events shaping our world. And you can trust it. It's smart and it's very topical. Visit ncregister.com to stay up to the minute on what you need to know about what's going on in the world. ncregister.com. Great news. They also have a great show on at 7 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio with the editors of National Catholic Register, Jeanette DeMillo and Matthew Bunsen.
That's right.
And that's 30 minutes of talk about the news that just transpired in the week. So catch that too. Hey, we have another call. Hopefully somebody's going to make another contribution for a guest they'd like to see in the year 2018. Welcome to the show. Call me Catholic Charlie from Seal Beach.
Hello, this is Charlie from Seal Beach. I'm actually your son, Charlie.
Oh.
And I want to wish you a happy birthday.
I thought I was being set up there. I saw that name pop up. I thought, who can top one son but another son? Thank you, darling. Thank you so much. You
well,
are such
you
a blessing
awesome
in my life.
Show. Oh, well, you're a blessing in my life, for sure. I've been on hold for a little bit, and I was listening to Katie McMaster's interview. And I was just mesmerized by it. You're such a beautiful interviewer, and you really get the best out of people. So, and I grew up just like Katie's daughters and Katie herself in a Catholic home. And, you know, you raised us to be such Catholic gentlemen.
Oh.
And, you know, couldn't have done it without you.
Thank you. That makes me teary, Charlie. Thank you very much. Charlie's my youngest of three sons, and, we have more access to Charlie because he lives here in Orange County. And so we are blessed to see him every week.
That puts pressure on son number three to make that call.
Son number one. No,
make
it's
that
number
call.
One son. Boy, poor Frank. He's going, why didn't you give me a heads up, guys, that we were doing this today? Darling, thank you for your wishes, for your lovely words. I love you so much. And, I hope it's a great year for all of us.
Thank you. You too. And, I will see you tonight.
Okay. God bless you, darling. Bye bye.
All right. Love you.
Love
bye.
You too, honey. Now, there was a news story in 2017 that wasn't that fun? How touched I am to have my
yeah.
sense of mind. Okay, so getting back to our retrospective look at 2017, there was a news story last year that really definitely caught my interest. It featured a detective, Julissa Trapp, who had solved a very intense serial killer case in the area. And in reading the article about her, I learned that she was the only female homicide detective in the Anaheim Police Department, and that she was a Catholic. There was a clue to that in the fact that she had a crucifix on her neck in the picture in the newspaper, and that she also referred to the fact that when she gets a case, she always buys a rosary and dedicates it to the victim and says the rosary while she is solving the crime. So here's a little portion of that interview, which I found so moving and so impressive. What a woman she was. When you are doing these cases, I was reading an article in the paper about it, and I loved a specific detail that they brought in, that they included in all the secular press, about how your faith came into part of your guidance and inspiration for finding the bringing justice for the victims.
Yes.
Can you share that with our listeners?
Yes. It was actually this case, I guess, that kind of exposed something that I do for all my victims.
A beautiful practice.
Yes. Yeah. It actually started when I had my second victim, and I was working a very difficult case, and I was just kind of stuck. I had run out of leads. I didn't know what to do. And I think sometimes when we work these cases, you know, they kind of consume you, and I needed kind of something to kind of calm my mind. And I decided to pick up a rosary for him. And, you know, there's a tranquility with meditating on God's life when you're praying the rosary, and it helped calm my mind, and it kind of helped me see things from a different perspective. And I decided at that point, like, I'm going to do these for each of my victims. And, you know, what I'll do is when I have a homicide victim, I'll pick a rosary that's unique to them, you know, whether it's their favorite color or if it's near a saint that we're celebrating during that time. And then I'll use it. I'll pray, you know, immediately after their death. I'll pray on their birthday, on the anniversary of their death, and then I eventually give it to the family. And it's been kind of a private thing that I did, but...
Well, I can see that. It's nothing you do to grandstand, but it is a beautiful detail that I think, especially being a police officer, Julissa, people need to hear these things. You are people with heart, and your generosity of service, I mean, listening to what you're doing to protect us and to bring justice to the killers is so important, and you do it with so much conscience and depth. And so I think it's a beautiful detail, and I know it was kind of a violation of your privacy, but I love the fact that the press was not shy about putting that in. Every story I read mentioned your practice with the rosary.
I was pleased, and at the beginning I wasn't particularly open to discussing it, only because it is a private thing that I do for the families. But when I give the rosary away when I feel I no longer need it, and I need to, you know, I tell the family, like...
That they need it now.
They do.
Yeah.
And, you know, their loved one has helped me all they can, and it's time to let them go. And when I gave it to Jure's mother, she walked out wearing it, and there was press there, and she kind of...
And there's connection, because you've never met the victim. We have the privilege today of talking with Detective Julissa Trapp, who works homicide for the Anaheim Police Department. She's an amazing example of the men and women who go into the trenches for us. I love the rosary story that you shared with us earlier, how you buy a pair of rosary beads at the beginning of a case, you pray for guidance, and then gift the rosary to the victim's family. Have the rosaries always been well received?
Yes. Even if a family isn't Catholic, I think it brings them comfort to know that their loved one has never been forgotten, because some cases take me a little longer to solve than others.
Yeah.
And so I think when I actually give it to them, it definitely brings them comfort to know that their loved one was very present in my mind and in my thought.
Yeah. And as a devotional, it puts Mary right there in their family and in their presence
and
in their home.
That's one of the reasons why the rosary is important to me, because, you know, she lost a son. And, you know, one of the hardest things being a homicide detective is given a death notification. And it, regardless of who the person is that's lying on the ground that has passed and what kind of activities they may have been into, all the mothers cry the same. And the sorrow and the pain is the same. It's across the board, and it's definitely something that you never get used to.
No, I would imagine not. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. This is just such a beautiful testimonial of faith in the line of police work. It's just exquisite. Julissa, do you notice faith among police officers in general, or is this something that they kind of hide behind their uniform?
No, I'm generalizing, but I think the majority of us are very faith-based. And, you know, if you look around, there's, you know, St. Michael is ever present in, lockers and, in our offices. And one of my best friends that is a police officer recently had a scary moment, and he was very shaken up by it. And, you know, I think with just the current times, you know, people targeting police officers, he was kind of reflecting on it. He has children. And I remember I had received a gift. It was a St. Michael
medal
that had come from the Vatican, was blessed by the Pope. And I said, open up your uniform, because he's working patrol. He's a sergeant now. And I took it off mine, put it on his vest, and I said, you're going to be okay. And it was like you could immediately see he was just like, he took a deep breath, and he says, I'm going to be okay.
Wow.
And was he?
He is.
Oh, that's beautiful. Julissa, what has been one of your scariest moments in law enforcement?
I mean, we all experience moments where we reflect back and go, wow, that was pretty close. You know, we have a lot of mentally ill and homeless people in Anaheim, and, you know, dealing with them and their illness can be, you know, trying at times because, you know, they're behaving violently, and sometimes it's hard to connect with them and make them understand, you know, that we're there to help. But I think for me right now, currently as a homicide detective, it's not that I'm scared of what happened, but I'm scared of what could happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my boss and I talk about it all the time, how it keeps getting closer and closer. And I don't want to work the most horrible case I know I'll ever have to work. And that would be the death of a police officer. Mm-hmm. But I know that I have to be prepared for it in case it does happen. And, it, you know, it keeps getting closer and closer. It's surrounding us with the two deputies in Compton that just got shot this week. And I fear that.
So you fear for your life. Yeah, that is very interesting. What would you like the public to know about police officers that you think they don't understand, that they don't get?
You know, it's easy to say, but it is the truth that we're human. We have feelings. We make mistakes. And when you come in contact with a law enforcement officer, you never know what they just came from. They could have just come from a call where they had to give CPR to a baby and the baby passed. And they're trying to process that. And there really is no time for us to reflect. You know, it's on to the next call. And the next call might be somebody who's had their garden hose, you know, stolen. Mm-hmm. And you just came from this tragic event. And so I think people forget sometimes that we're not robots, that we're not machines, that we are human and we do feel. And sometimes we have bad days and good days.
Yeah. But you are putting it all on the line for us. You know, that was an excerpt from my conversation with Detective Julissa Trapp, and what an honor it was to interview her. I mean, what a bright light she is in such a grim profession. Yeah. Hey, we have another caller from Portland, Oregon. We have Frank on the line. Do you have some suggestions for us here on Call Me Catholic, Frank?
Well, just that I want to call and wish you a very happy birthday, Mom.
It's my third son. Thank you, darling. Now, I'm so glad you saved face by calling in before the end of the show to surprise me. Thank you very much. That's very sweet. But you wouldn't have wanted your two brothers to show you up.
Happy birthday. No, I have to run. We'll have to have the last word.
Well, thank you, darling. And I hope it's not too cold up there in Portland for you.
No, wishing you guys and all the Call Me Catholic family a great start to the new year. And I thought that was an awesome segment you just shared. That was one I've definitely shared with other friends who've been interested in the show. So
thank you.
Love. Interesting story and interview.
Yeah, I
right,
hope
happy
to.
Happy birthday, Mom.
Thank you, darling. I hope to get more interviews like that. And I love you, and I hope to see you soon, sweetie. Happy
right,
New Year.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Happy New Year.
Love you. Well, what an honor to have my three sons call me on my birthday. Greatest present in the world. You know what's cute? They're listening. I mean, they actually do listen. They are three of our five listeners.
Right on. Wow.
That was an honor, and I love them so much. I'm so, so blessed to have these three marvelous sons in my life. I want to close the show with an excerpt from one of my really exciting interviews of 2017. I have always been a big fan of Harry Connick Jr., and it was such a tickle to interview him over the phone about his new show and also about his Catholic roots and his Catholic traditions. And so here's a fun little excerpt from some of my exchange with Harry Connick Jr. this year. You like to play games on your daytime show, Harry, your Emmy-nominated daytime talk show. You play Do-Re-Mi, where somebody gets to answer a question and they win stuff. Harry tries, Harry's secrets. I even saw you take on like a third grader in a spelling bee.
Okay. Well, the last time I'm going to do that, I got crushed.
Well, you got a very hard word. So do you guys play games at home? Did your girls grow up playing board games or card games?
We play Bananagrams.
Oh, yeah, that's fun.
Okay. I like Bananagrams.
All right. So this is a little different. This is a game we're going to call Catholic This or Catholic That. Now you're okay. A Catholic, and I like that you're not embarrassed or self-conscious about embracing your Catholic identity publicly. It's not a badge of privilege, and just it's an emblem of hope and joy and goodness, and we're glad you're in our club, Harry. So I'm going to name two categories in the Catholic faith, and you pick the one that resonates most with you right now. So it's not a right or wrong thing. It's a little bit like the swiping game, but you have to give me more than that. So I could say the Hail Mary, the Our Father. And you'd say, okay, this one I like. Okay, here we go. You ready?
Yeah.
All right, favorite nun or favorite priest?
Well, I grew up with priests, so I'd have to say there weren't a whole lot of nuns in my life, so I'm more familiar with priests, so I'd say priest.
Okay, well, you've got a lot of women in your life now.
Yeah.
Maybe one of them will grow up to be a sister. Okay, candles or incense?
Oh, candles, 100%.
Yeah, you don't like the smell of incense?
I like it, but I like the glow of candlelight better.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I hate going into these beautiful cathedrals where they've reverted to the battery-operated candles, where you put a coin in.
I get it. But I like you know, the old-fashioned flame candles.
Jimmy G is my engineer here. I can't get Harry Connick Jr. to say one negative thing.
Keep
Stay
trying.
On the phone with me long enough.
Okay, here we go. This is a good one now. The Ave Maria or How Great Thou Art.
Well, I've sung both.
I know you have.
And I would have to say, oh, man. I mean, the thing about How Great Thou Art is that the words are simple. They're not simplistic, but they're very, very easy to understand, and you can get swept away. And although I know what every word in the Ave Maria means in Latin, there's a difference. You're sort of singing the entire sentiment, and it's more like gradual swells of emotion that go through as opposed to specific feelings when you hit specific words. But the melody and the harmony in Ave Maria's, I mean, it's one of the greatest pieces of music of all time. So maybe How Great Thou Art, because I sing that one all the time.
Okay.
When I'm performing.
You want to know something? I'm so glad you said that. I do love the Ave Maria too. And I've heard it's on your Christmas album, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. But I was at a concert, your concert in San Diego. I think it was maybe 2 years ago. And you broke into How Great Thou Art toward the end of the concert. And it was so soul-stirring. I literally tried to record it on my phone, but my hand was kind of like shaking. It was so sweaty, I couldn't get it all. But I sent it to everybody afterwards, and I said, listen to this, even this bad recording of it, you're going to get how incredibly stirring and it's just soul-swelling. It was absolutely spectacular.
Thank you. That's so nice.
So I'm glad you said How Great Thou Art.
Thank you.
Because it gave me a chance to tell that story. Okay, Advent or Lent?
Lent, let's see. You know, I don't have much to give up anymore.
Like,
I don't drink. I don't smoke. I exercise every day. I try to eat right. So, like, Lent's tough because, like, whatever I give up is, man, it leaves me with absolutely nothing. But you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm not saying I'm perfect, but it's just...
Well, like, there's foods you like to eat. I mean, you like that New Orleans food.
I know. So, but then, like, what do you... Yeah, I guess maybe Advent, because Lent's hard. I mean, Lent, you know, that's it's a challenge. So probably Advent.
Well, you know, Raymond Arroyo, and I know that you know each other. You're both native sons of New Orleans, but he did a great special on PBS this year on. Oh, I wish we could have heard the rest of that conversation, but we'll get him on again next year. But, hey, tune in again with us next week, same day, same time, for more good news from our good faith. Until then, I'm Peggy Normandin, but you can call me Catholic.
You've been listening to Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin, live from the Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove, California. Call Me Catholic is a co-production of EWTN Radio and Orange County Catholic Radio. Heard weekly on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.